All right, let's get into it today with a case that should really get you thinking about how far the law can go when it comes to holding someone responsible for a crime. We're talking about People v. Stamp. Just picture this, a robbery happens, right? You know, nobody gets hurt, like physically hurt during the actual crime, but then the victim, they die of a heart attack a little while later. So the question is, could the robbers actually get convicted of murder for that?
Yeah, it's a wild one. What makes this People v. Stamp case so interesting is it really gets into this thing called the felony murder rule. And on top of that, it introduces the eggshell skull doctrine. It really kind of like pushes the boundaries of, legal responsibility.
Yeah, definitely a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Let's set the scene first. We're going back to 1965, California.
Yeah.
The place is a general amusement company. Two guys, Stamp and Corey, they barge in and they're armed. We're talking a gun, a blackjack, and their intention is to rob the place. They confront the owner, a guy named Carl Honeyman.
And that little detail about the weapons, that's huge. Having a gun and a blackjack, it just automatically makes things way more terrifying for Honeyman. Ups the stakes.
Oh, for sure. Now, here's where things take a turn. The robbers, they get away with what they came for, and during the robbery itself, nobody gets physically hurt. But Honeyman, he's clearly not okay. He's pale, he's having trouble breathing, he can't even stand up.
And to make matters worse, we find out that Honeyman already had a heart condition, atherosclerosis to be specific. This becomes a major part of the whole case.
It really does. Tragically, only about 15, maybe 20 minutes after those robbers take off, Honeyman collapses. They rush him to the hospital, but he's dead when they get there. Cause of death,
Yeah.
heart attack.
All right. And this brings up a really crucial question. Did the robbery actually cause Honeyman's death? Or would he have died from this heart condition anyway, regardless of the robbery? It all comes down to causation, which is at the heart of this case.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what the trial focused on. You had these medical experts, and they testified that the extreme stress of that robbery is what triggered the heart attack. They argued that even though Honeyman had this pre-existing heart condition, the terrifying experience was like the tipping point.
And in the end, the jury found Stamp and Khoury guilty, not just of first-degree robbery, but also of first-degree murder. They were hit with life sentences.
Okay, wait a minute. How does that even make sense? How can it be murder? They didn't touch him, and you said he had a heart condition, so how does that equal murder?
Okay, so this is where that thing I mentioned before, the felony murder rule, comes in. California Penal Code Section 189, it basically says that if someone dies during the course of certain felonies, robberies on that list, it automatically bumps up to first-degree murder.
So you're saying it doesn't even matter if they meant to kill him?
Nope. And that's the real kicker here. The prosecution doesn't have to prove that they intended to kill or even that the death was something they could have predicted. Just the fact that Honeyman died during the robbery is enough to make it murder under this rule.
Wow, that's a tough rule, to be honest. So,
Yeah.
like, if someone's running away during a bank robbery, trips, falls, hits their head, and dies, that's still felony murder.
Exactly. And there's a reason they have this really strict approach. It's all about deterrence. The idea is that if criminals know that any death, even a total accident during a felony, could mean they're on the hook for murder, maybe they'll think twice before doing something dangerous.
I can see the logic there, but hold on a second. In Stamp, the robbers had no clue about Honeyman's heart condition. How can you hold them responsible for something they couldn't have known about?
And that is where the eggshell skull doctrine steps in. Basically, this legal principle says you take your victim as they are. You're responsible for the consequences of your actions, even if there's some hidden vulnerability you couldn't have known about.
Right, like that saying, you break it, you bought it, even if you didn't know it was fragile in the first place. So did the defense, did they just accept that?
Oh, absolutely not. They fought back, appealed the conviction, argued that Honeyman's death was completely unpredictable and that the robbery wasn't the direct cause of the heart attack. But the court, well, they didn't buy it. They upheld the convictions.
What was their reasoning for, you know, for sticking with what seems like a really tough decision?
They put a lot of weight on this thing called the substantial factor test. It means the robbery didn't have to be the only cause of death, just a contributing factor. Since they decided the stress of the robbery was a substantial factor in the heart attack, the court decided to hold those robbers responsible.
So essentially, the court was saying, you started this chain of events, you're responsible for what happened, even if other things were involved.
Exactly. They really emphasized that as long as the felony, in this case the robbery, contributes to shortening the victim's life, it doesn't matter if they might have died soon anyway from a pre-existing condition.
That's That's a pretty strong statement. It really shows how much weight the felony murder rule carried in this case. But what about the other things they appealed? Did the defense have any other arguments?
Oh yeah, they had more. They argued that the felony murder rule, like, it shouldn't even apply here at all. They said because Honeyman's death was just so out of the blue, you couldn't have seen it coming. But as we know, the court, they disagreed.
Right, the court really stuck to that rule.
Yeah.
But let's take a closer look at the logic behind these legal principles. Like, why are they so strict, even in cases where the death seems like a total freak accident or something no one could have predicted?
You've hit on a really key point. This takes us into some pretty deep legal and even ethical territory. One big argument for having strict liability in felony murder cases is, well, it's about deterrence. It's the idea that if you hold criminals responsible for any death that happens during a felony, whether they meant it or not, it's going to make them think twice before committing those dangerous acts in the first place.
So it's like the law is saying, look, if you're going to rob someone, you better be ready to face the music for anything that happens, even if you didn't plan it.
Exactly. They want to make it really clear that felonies are dangerous and lives are at risk. It's about protecting the public and making sure that anyone thinking about doing something like this knows the potential consequences.
Yeah, I get that, thinking about it from like a public safety standpoint.
Mm.
But what about, I don't know, like the morality of it all? How can they say it's okay to hold someone responsible for a death they didn't intend, didn't even see coming?
That brings up this idea of moral blameworthiness. Even if they didn't mean to kill someone, the person who committed the felony, well, they still started the whole thing. Their actions led to that situation.
So in the Stamp case, even though they didn't plan to kill Honeyman, going in to rob the place created this dangerous situation. And that situation, the court said, is ultimately what led to his death, even with the heart condition being a factor.
Exactly. The law saying that actions have consequences. Sometimes they're unintended and sometimes they're tragic. But when you're committing a crime, you're taking a risk. The felony murder rule is saying you take that risk, you're accountable, even if the outcome is something you never could have guessed.
So you can't just say, oops, didn't mean for that to happen.
Right. It's forcing everyone to face facts. You can try to control what you do, but there's always going to be things you can't predict. And things can go wrong, especially when crime is involved.
This makes me think about different countries and how they handle situations like this. Are there other legal systems that have these felony murder rules or strict liability ideas?
It's a good question. The thing is, the felony murder rule, especially the stricter version like we have in California, you see it more in common law systems, like the U.S. and some Commonwealth countries. Many other countries, though, their systems focus more on proving intent. They want to see a clear, predictable link between the crime and the death.
So those systems would require a deeper look into each case, right? They'd want to know what the defendant was thinking, if the death could have been predicted, and like how involved they were in the events that led to the death.
Exactly. It's a lot more about looking at the specifics. It's interesting how legal principles and how they're interpreted, how they can be so different depending on the culture or the society. Makes you wonder, is one way really better or fairer than another?
That's a big question for sure. Let's bring it back to the U.S., though. You said that the Stamp case caused a lot of debate about the felony murder rule. What were some of the big criticisms that came up after the decision?
A lot of people thought the rule could be too harsh, especially when the death was a total accident. Like, no one saw it coming. Their argument was that it's just not right to give someone the same punishment for a planned killing and a death that happened because of a weird, unpredictable series of events.
So the punishment doesn't always fit the crime. Like in Stamp, they probably thought they were just committing a property crime, and then bam, murder charges. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. That gap between what you think you're doing and the potential consequences got people talking about fairness. Some legal experts argued that the felony murder rule, at least the way it was used in Stamp, kind of takes away the whole idea of intent. And intent is like a core part of so many other crimes.
So they're saying that to be fair, you really need to look at each case individually. Right. Not just have a blanket rule that might end up catching people who never meant to hurt anyone, but still face the most severe consequences.
Exactly. This whole debate about the felony murder rule and how it was used in People v. Stamp, it really shows the struggle in our legal system,
yeah.
Trying to balance keeping the public safe with making sure things are fair and just.
It's definitely a lot to think about. We could probably spend hours talking about all the ethics and philosophy here. But for now, maybe we should switch gears a bit. Let's focus on what actually happened after Stamp. How did this decision affect how the felony murder rule was interpreted and used later on?
Well, in California, Stamp really cemented that broader interpretation of the rule. It became a precedent. It was like, okay, even if the victim had a pre-existing condition, the defendant can still be held liable if their actions were a substantial factor in the death during a felony.
Like a domino effect, right? One case sets the standard and then it ripples out, changing how similar cases are handled in the future.
You got it. But it's important to remember that legal precedent isn't set in stone. It changes as courts see new situations, as society's values evolve, and as legal theories develop.
So what happened in the years after Stamp? Did other states just follow California's lead with this broad interpretation of the felony murder rule, or did they come up with different ways of dealing with it?
That's the million-dollar question, and one we'll dive into in the next part of our deep dive. We'll see how other places tackled the tricky parts of the felony murder rule, and we'll look at whether they came up with any alternatives to deal with some of the issues raised by cases like People v. Stamp.
So we've really gotten deep into People v. Stamp.
Right.
Looking at that strict liability thing, all the debate about the felony murder rule, but like you said, law, it's always changing. So what happened in other states? Did they all just go along with California's really broad interpretation?
Not quite. California went all the way with their broad interpretation of the felony murder rule. But other states, they tried different things. They were trying to find ways to deal with those fairness issues we've been talking about.
Right. You mentioned those alternative approaches. What kind of limits did other states put on the felony murder rule?
Well, for instance, some states decided to narrow it down. They said, okay, for the felony murder rule to apply, the felony itself has to be inherently dangerous. So yeah. If someone died during a felony that wasn't considered inherently dangerous, that rule wouldn't automatically apply.
I see. Like you're saying there's a difference between something like robbery, where it's very possible things could get violent, and something like, I don't know, tax fraud, where it's hard to imagine someone dying as a direct result of that crime.
Exactly. That became a big deal in a lot of states. Another thing they did was add a foreseeability requirement. Some states said, look, to use the felony murder rule, the prosecution has to prove that the death was a predictable outcome of that felony.
Okay, so let's go back to Stamp. If they had that rule, the prosecution, they would have to show the jury that any reasonable person could have guessed that robbing someone might lead to a person with a heart condition dying.
Right. Having that extra layer of proof makes it much tougher to get a felony murder conviction if the death was a surprise or didn't seem directly connected to the crime itself.
It's really interesting how different states use the felony murder rule in different ways. Shows you how complicated our legal system is. No one-size-fits-all approach.
Definitely not. Different states, even different courts within a state, they can interpret and use legal principles differently. It's like this patchwork of legal precedent all across the country.
So, after all that, where does it leave People v. Stamp? Is it still a landmark case, even though other states took different approaches to the felony murder rule?
Oh, for sure. Especially in California, Stamp is still a big deal. It's a reminder that even if someone had a health problem before, that doesn't mean someone else is automatically off the hook if their actions played a part in a death during a felony.
Like the law is saying, it matters what you do, not just what you meant to do. You start something, you're responsible for what happens, even if you never planned for it to go that way.
Exactly. And that's a major reason why People v. Stamp is still something they study and argue about in law schools and courts today. It makes everyone think hard about responsibility, about whether a crime's outcome could have been predicted, and about how to balance stopping crime with being fair in our justice system.
This whole deep dive, it's been quite the journey. We started with a robbery that went bad and ended up talking about the felony murder rule, where it came from, how it's changed, and all the arguments people still have about it. Amazing how one case can lead to so much discussion.
It really is. The big thing for our listeners to remember is this. People v. Stamp is a perfect example of how the law tries to deal with these really tough questions, like how do you figure out what caused something? Who's to blame? And where do you draw the line on responsibility? It shows us that even situations that seem pretty simple can have all these hidden layers that affect how justice works.
And even more than that, People v. Stamp makes us think critically about the legal ideas that our whole society is based on. Should it all be about the outcome of an action? Or should intent, what someone meant to do, and whether they could have predicted what would happen, should those things matter more? These are questions that legal experts are still figuring out, and they're shaping how criminal law is changing. So think about this as you go about your day. How far should responsibility go when it comes to things we didn't mean to cause? Something to ponder from the deep dive. Until next time.